football on off the ball.
That was the main thing that when I finished playing football. In other words, you're bringing the knowledge that you have over years of football to people who watch football.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehill and Paul Murphy.
Welcome along. It is semi-final weekend in the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. It's not the last four we would have anticipated at the start of the season. Dublin, having this remarkable summer under Niall O'Callaghan, having knocked out Limerick in the last round, will take on the very strong favourites, and it doesn't matter who in Cork try and play this down at this stage, Cork in the first of the semi-finals on Saturday. And then on Sunday, it's the old rivals meeting again, shades of 2019 in the All-Ireland final. We have a semi-final between rivals Tipperary and Kilkenny. Delighted to say it. We've got Paul Murphy here. Paul, how are you?
How's it going, lads?
James Skell, how are things?
I'm good, fellas. How are you?
Before we get into this weekend, Capitagle did get to the Galway Senior Hurling League final at the weekend. Didn't quite go your way, Skell. It was a high-scoring encounter.
No, it didn't go our way. We got beaten. It had sort of a semi-championship feel about it, even though we're kind of 6 or 7 weeks out. So it's good to get those kind of games. Charlottemore won it. They beat us by, I think, 2 points in the end. I ended up in a position on the pitch I didn't think I'd find myself.
Nice.
Just the way it worked out, right? So the last play of the game, I just told our full back and central back just to go up to the full, just go up to 14, and then all the Turtlemore team retreated. So I pick up the ball on our 65 and start soldering towards the Turtlemore goal. Right, I end up 30 yards from goal with the headspace to shoot, but no, I end up passing. One of our guys gets fouled. I take a free. Hit some guy's head over the bar, game over. So, I think I hit some lad's head. That's kind of the sound I thought it was, anyway. So a bit of a fancy game, yeah.
All action performance. So before we get into the semi-finals itself then, if you were back playing in the league final, that would indicate to me 6-7 weeks' time you're playing championship this year.
Correct, yes.
Good.
That's it. I'm committed.
Right. Well, what made you go that way? Because a few weeks ago you were very much on the fence about whether you were going to play.
I was very much, and that was in a genuine place. Because you know the way the Neagles just they become more than Neagles, Murph, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I have a couple of friends who are extremely persistent. You know, my cousin is the manager, my best friend is the trainer. It's like they wouldn't just F off. It's just, you know, the little dog that kept nibbling at you, just those kind of people. So I'm back. But once you're in, it's good. Mm. And so you just kind of have to forget about the Neagles and get on with it. Simple as that.
Fair play. I think it would have been very hard to walk away, though, given how close he got last season. That, like, it must feel like there's a certain amount of unfinished business. I know you're, nearly 2 months away before the first championship game here, but...
Yeah, like, a couple of lads would have said that to me, right? And this is being 100% honest. That wouldn't bother me.
Okay.
You know, so some people would say, you couldn't walk away after last year. What if you win it this year? Like, grand. Fine. Do you mean? I'll go back if I want to go back. And I want to play. Not with the... You know, not because I'm missing out on anything. And like that was the case with Beckham Galway when I retired from Galway. Like, you know, I was just done. I was finished. That was it, you know, regardless of where you're at in terms of pecking order, even from a team perspective. But same way with Capitagle. But once you're in after that, I say once you're committed, just shut up, get on with it and try and go for the cup.
This brings us around very nicely, Murph, to Shane O'Donnell's comments. So we're recording on Monday, which has actually been a benefit. We left it a couple of days because we knew the Skell had the league final at the weekend before we would record this. And we got a few bits of news, and Shane O'Donnell was doing media today. He's not ruled out the possibility of playing next season. He says he's got a tough decision to make in the off-season. His partner may well make up some of the decision-making on this about what they do in the new year. But he is open to the idea of playing while he was pretty much convinced the 25 was going to be his last season. So potentially we're going to see more of him. We might see more of John Conlon, some of the other older stagers on the Clare panel. But Shane O'Donnell, open-minded about another year.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of Clare fans will be really happy with that. And Brian Lowen and players alike, I'm sure, will be really happy that it's not definite that he's going to leave. But I think, I saw what he said, that there was a few of them that all said 2025 would be their last year. And it basically almost sounded like a pact, if that's fair to say, that they were all going to go. Probably not the best way to do it. I would say, and Martin Skehill said there, leave just because you want to leave. Don't leave because everybody's leaving or because a group you said you would 2 years ago said we'll leave in 2025. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, it is the healthiest thing to do is go away for the winter and or autumn winter and like maybe get a taste of freedom in terms of go off and do a few bits and see how you feel. See, do you have the garage to go back, or do you kind of think, actually, do you know what? I would prefer you know, this is the right time for me to go and just step away or whatever. So, yeah, no, it was interesting hearing him say it because it's very open. It's very early also, you know, he's only finished a few weeks. It's very early to hear players talking like that. We're not used to hearing it really. And he probably put a lot of the rest of them in a position as well where they'll have to answer a few questions if they're in front of any microphones over the next few weeks. But yeah, look, we'll see what happens. It'll be, you know, obviously anytime Shane O'Donnell is going to tug out, it's great for not only Clare supporters, but any neutral supporters of Clare because he's just electrifying to watch. And also, you know, the rest of them there as well, whether, you know, Peter Duggan's mentioned, Tony Kelly, you know, John Conlon, there's plenty of them mentioned there. But look, if there's one thing, I think Skettle will probably agree with me there, you know, go on your own merits. Don't go just because a group of lads are going. Decide yourself, see if you, because the one thing is, once the door's closed, you head off into the sunset then. Not like Michael Murphy, Donegal, he obviously came back. But in general, you know, it's done, it's done and it's behind you. But don't do it just because you said 2 years ago you'd all go together. Do it because you want to go, you want to leave, and that's it, you know.
And it's a very personal and independent decision too, isn't it? Regardless of the group or what you've won together or your bond, you know, or I suppose the packs, as you said, you might have made. This is extremely personal, extremely individual. So, like next year rolls around, it's you that has to go back training. It's you that has to go through the injuries and go through all the prep in your own personal life.
Yeah.
To manage and structure so that you can perform on the pitch. And like I always thought, Shane O'Donnell, he always struck me as a person that was very, very independent. Was like it's going after America to study or managing his own life, I'd say, outside of hurling. He was never, well, to me anyway, he was never kind of completely infatuated and broiled by the game or even, you know, he always did his own thing. So that's why it was kind of semi-surprising to hear him, you know, that that he was going to come back again. But because he's 32 next year, is that right? Which is by no means old. I'm not saying it is, but it's like, I know he has personal and professional ambitions that would go well beyond what ours would be, to be fair. I think I heard somewhere that he wanted to go into space, the astronaut or something like that. That's genuine, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. I mean,
I think he sees it as unrealistic, but it is a dream, yeah.
Okay.
Well,
it's a tough thing to do.
Dreams can often become reality, people like him. So.
Oh, totally. And look, the other thing is, he's 32. Obviously, you take into account that he bursts onto the scene at 19, 20. He's very, very young when he first comes into that team. Yes. He's got quite a few miles on the clock, but at the same time, he's managed his minutes very carefully over the last few seasons. And this year might feel like a slightly weird one as well, Murph, because, and he references, I know, in the off the ball interview that he only got the few minutes against Tipperary where he tried to come on and make a difference. And then the Limerick game was a bit dead because Limerick were qualified, Clare weren't. It wasn't on TV. It was kind of a strange game if he was going to bow out in that one. He might feel that this season was almost a complete write off, and actually, there was very little that went into this year by comparison.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. It was one of the first things I thought about when he was introduced in the last game, as kind of, you know, sending them in for maybe a saving grace in terms of the last game that in which they could still possibly qualify from. Obviously, the one with Limerick was a dead rubber. But I did feel that when I was watching the game that, like, you know, this could be the end of Shane O'Donnell in Clare jersey because, like we said, he'd given those previous interviews where you were very aware of his ambitions outside the sport. And there was that kind of a feeling as well because he was coming on and because he hasn't played the league over the last 2 years to try and, I suppose, give himself the best chance playing championship. All those factors, I suppose, subconsciously, you kind of got the feeling that this may be his last year, even before he came out with these comments. So there's a lot of factors there that, funny enough, when I was actually watching the game, I was thinking this could potentially be, and I'd agree with you, it would be like winning the All-Ireland, obviously a fantastic way to go. Again, not saying that you'd retire then just so you could say you went out in high, but it'd be disappointing for this year that he never really got to get going between injuries and between, you know, everything. He was a bit part player in a lot of the games. Now, he had great impact when he came on in games, but, you know, I think there is a part there that would leave you curious to say that, okay, well, let's just maybe give it 1 year where everything focuses towards this and I give myself the best chance of playing as much as I can, leaving it all on the field and then leaving. I think there definitely is a part of that in sports people in general where when a year was kind of out of your hands to an extent, you kind of feel you want to leave on your own terms and take the control back into your hands. So there definitely was a feeling of that this year with him.
Yeah, because I was kind of thinking as well, Skell, like, so Desi Farrell, when he stood down very soon after full time in the Dublin Footballers loss to Tyrone at the weekend, he said he'd made the decision but kept it kind of away from the panel, but he'd informed the county board earlier this year that he wouldn't be seeking an extension to his term. So he's known all year long it's going to be his final year. Like, there's something a little bit dangerous in that, isn't there? Like, this idea of deciding that come what may, I'm going to be gone at the end of it. Like, if you're a player and say you have a fantastic year, maybe then you do have a little bit left in the tank. Or maybe if you're trying to define it purely in what you do during the season, you could make a rash or silly decision to step away.
Yeah, see, I would hope that people who make them type of decisions would have thought about them thoroughly. You know, and it's very, I don't think it's actually possible to equate the same, those type of decisions for a manager as a player, because they're so different. They are completely different, because one is very heavily physically based, as we know. You know, obviously the playing element. And I can't imagine the tax that it takes on a person to be the manager of a team like Dublin. So I'd say it just gets to a point where, right, from a management perspective, you just say, this, I actually can't manage this person, you know, anymore. I just can't do it. Whereas from a hurling perspective, me personally, was just physically, I said, I just can't keep up with this anymore. You know, the outside life, the professional life, you know, the travel, etc., all these kind of contributing factors, you know, they were kind of weighing on me as the year went on. And it probably coincided with COVID too, which the whole ambience of the team just changed dramatically. It just went so different. You know, there was very, very hard to generate camaraderie. If you remember that time, Murph, it was very hard to get kind of any bit of bond with even new players that came into the squad, because you were kept in such isolation from each other. There was no eating, there was barely any travel, there was no talking out together. You know, it was like leaving work to go training felt like leaving work to go to work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it became quite taxi. And I just said to myself, at the time, there was no outlook for it to be any better in the year, for the following year, because it was still rampant in COVID in 2020 into 21. So I said, all them factors, mix them all together, that's enough. But on the same token, if you're someone like Shane O'Donnell, who has, you know, physical attributes that a lot of people don't have, let's say, his electric pace, electric skill, takes care of himself very well. This year hasn't been too much mileage clocked up, albeit come back from an injury. So that would point towards him being ready to make another, you say, cut it next year. But the questions I would say towards him is, what's his aspirations professionally, and will the hurling impact that? Like, his aspirations could be far higher than the normal Joe Soap, the normal 5 minutes of a person. But if he was just going into a normal job or work, etc., it would make his decision easily more structured, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
So I can see where he might be just a little bit, you know, at odds with himself nearly to a degree.
Oh, totally. And look, the commitment to this is crazy. I remember chatting to him about this last year, and he spends most of the year in Dublin because work is that end of the country. And then kind of when the focus goes on Clare, oftentimes he goes back, stays in the parents' house to be fully committed to Clare. And same when club comes round at that point of the year as well. So like, this is a guy who very clearly is not defined by hurling, as you said, but still his commitment level to it is crazy. But as a neutral here, I'm excited at the prospect of getting another season potentially out of him and some of those other Clare players who are there, because I think it's one of those things where if they wouldn't want to leave the way that this season ended. And I know you could just as easily leave in Croke Park the year before, but it's very hard when you don't get out of the group stages and maybe didn't defend your title in the way you would have hoped to then step away.
That's exactly it. It can probably actually make their decision a little bit easier in that regard, because you almost feel maybe robbed of a year that it didn't go really well this year. Whereas if they actually did a little bit better and, let's say, came third but were beaten in a quarter final or something, you know, something that was a little bit more but still didn't really get anywhere, they might then feel that, like, it's quite maybe confusing to make your decision basically at that stage. Like, this year they can feel was an extent. They played four matches, really, championship. That was it, done. And that might build up a little bit of hunger to say, well, that's not the way I want to finish. And, you know, what I thought 2 years ago or last year when I was making this decision to say that 2025 will be my last year, well, that's not how I feel now. And that's the kind of, I suppose, self-awareness you have to have, is that itch still inside you to go, actually, no, that's not the terms I want to go out on. And it also might be a very positive thing in terms of the Clare panel next year. Like, they'll go off now. I found, like, let's say in 2013 when we were finished earlier than, that was the earliest I'd ever been finished in my career, I think, quarter final. Well, as early as I've ever finished anyway. But watching the semi-finals and the final, you really just felt like, you know, you were outside the party looking in, going like, I'd love to be there. And that feeling in itself was huge motivation for the following year. So, like, you can guarantee a lot of those players will go away and say, no, I want to give this a serious rattle, bring that emotion into next year, see what kind of a kick we get out of it. And for all those, you know, Clare have great underage teams coming through as well. They're going to pick up quite a few players. Just having that presence in the dressing room will serve a huge amount to them. Like, never mind if you're only bringing Shane O'Donnell on once it comes to the championship, or John Conlon or whoever, their presence serves for a huge amount for those underage lads. But I do think that the fact that this year, like, they didn't get out of the Munster Championship at all, or the round robin phase, I think because of that, it actually helps them make their decision, because it's either a definite thing of, you know what, that's not the way I want to finish my career, or actually, yeah, do you know what? I've had enough of this now and I'm going to hit the road. So I think if anything, it might actually help them come to a decision.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I think it could be good to see some of those guys back for another year next season. And as you said, the pressure is now put on his teammates who potentially were part of that pact who are going to be asked about, well, O'Donnell says he has a tough decision, but he might come back. What are you going to do? The referees, we have appointed for this weekend. Everyone seems annoyed about both. So that's sometimes a good sign from a referee if you annoy both sides of the aisle. Johnny Murphy is going to be the ref for Cork against Dublin. And James Owens has been appointed for Kilkenny against Tip on Sunday. That means, does it scale that Liam Gordon has the final?
That means Liam Gordon. That means Liam Gordon has the final.
Be a leading contender.
I could see why, definitely, for sure. Yeah, you'd imagine it'd be between himself and Tyler Walsh, wouldn't it?
So
is that wrong or right of me to say that?
No. I think it is, and I know we talked about this a bit in the WhatsApp group on was a Friday when this news came out as well. I think that Tyler Walsh is a really good referee. I think Tyler Walsh has disappeared since the Munster final. And I think there was definitely stories going around that they were unhappy, those assessors and those who give the feedback on how games went, about the first half of just the six frees in the Munster final. Right. Now, I'm not sure if that should necessarily go against him, though, because didn't Thomas Walsh do a really good job in the second half of that Munster final as well?
He did, and today he had to go off injured. So I don't know. To go back to your original question, I'm inclined to agree with you. It feels like, certain times when referees get big games, i.e. get the final, mm-hmm. It comes at a time when you think they have reached that point in their career where they've done enough to warrant it being them. And I just feel like Liam Gordon, who's been on the scene for the last number of years now and has refereed big games, Munster finals, or Ulster finals, has been standby refereeing the final, now is the time for him to step in. So you're right. I wouldn't say it was such finality as you have, or such. You said it very definitively. It looks like it's a 90% chance of Liam Gordon, for sure.
Has Liam Gordon done the final before?
No.
He's done a club final, I think, but not the season.
He deserves it, yeah. And is either him or Thomas Welch, really, is what we're saying.
Yeah, because if we got the fixtures there, the Galway will they'll send out the fixtures, but they send out the whole fixture list for the weekend, right? Mm-hmm. And I've just gone down through, and I think I saw Liam Gordon doing I think he was down for like a junior B championship game.
Yeah.
Junior A championship game, something like that. I was like, fuck me, you go from an Ireland final to a junior B game.
That's it. That's the free. I saw Brian Dowland a few weeks ago, the day after they played, Kildare played Dublin, wasn't that it? Yeah, Kildare played Dublin. The day after, he was down in the field. I was out talking to Fogg's under-9s, and he was out coaching the Danes Ford under-9s against the Fogg's under-9s. And I was like, 10 o'clock in the morning, you're only after finishing up your championship the night before. I was like, that's dedication. That's back to earth for you now.
But it's amazing because sometimes we take it for granted. I take it for granted at times, but even the league final there on Saturday, Shane Hines is the referee. He's second in command now, let's say, on Saturday. Mm. I think it's Saturday, he was saying. He was umpire. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
Like, he was umpire in the league final. Didn't have to be there whatsoever. But putting yourself in, in a position to help other officials like that. It just speaks to these referees who are genuinely passionate about doing the job. If you know what I mean. We play because we love the game. And they obviously do it because they love it too.
Mm.
So part of me to be guilty at times and to be abused in the middle of the game. No, I didn't on Saturday, of course, the league game, but alas.
I didn't enjoy when people saw that James Owens was doing the game on Sunday and there were a lot of Tip supporters going, oh, James Owens, oh no, it's going to be a free fest or he's going to be against Tip. And then the Kilkenny fans came straight back and went, do you see what happened in the 2019 final? So I think they can both.
The Cork fans were saying something about Johnny Murphy as well. So there's a lot of
apparently he lives near the border or something like that. He lives down in South Limerick, so he's near Cork. So
hang on now. Don't let him wait too easy now. Murph, how do you feel about the referee Sunday?
No, to be fair, I don't mind. Like, I mean, when I saw it, I was like, I laughed initially because I was like, oh, sure, here we go. Now, like, it's Kilkenny Tipperary. But he took over the last I saw of him. He took over from Thomas Welch.
He did a really good job in extra time, by the way.
Which isn't simple coming into a game like that. But it is what it is. Like, I mean, the referee won't affect. Like, he'll obviously have an impact on the game, but the better team will win. That'll be it. It won't be a case of whatever comes down to. But what do I feel? Sure. Nothing really, to be honest. I'm more concerned about Kilkenny getting over the line, to be honest.
No, it's just interesting that the referees left in it. We've heard talk before about referees, refereeing games where their own county is coming up against said county the week after, whatever. There's been controversy, whereas obviously you don't have Colm Lyons, you don't have Stack, you don't have these people involved this weekend. So it's like a clear run of the thing. So there should be no controversy, please God, strength in this situation. So
hold that thought until Monday morning or Sunday evening whenever we record it next.
Your only thought at the moment is that actually the only beneficiary from Limerick going out of the championship early is a Limerick referee, because it puts them in contention to get the big games.
I no comment. I'm wise to your game now, William.
I was trying to just kind of tease a little quote out there to see where we could go with it. But anyway, look, the team news in ahead of this weekend for the best part, at least the injury news that we got today, because Kilkenny and Cork and Tipperary all did media. Tipperary is ongoing as we record, so if we get anything in from Tip, we will work it into the pod. But Kilkenny were first up. That was Derek Ling, was talking to Nolan Park earlier today. And the good news for them, Skell, is Owen Cody is fit and firing. So he's had 4 weeks of training in him now. He scored 1-5 against Galway in the first round, 1-13 against Antrim. Then he had that injury which kept him out since. Missed the Leinster final. We were wondering how long he was going to be out. But apparently, according to Derek Ling, he had a few niggles, but he's been able to come back now for the last few weeks in training. It's understood he's been able to train really since the Leinster final itself. So how much of a boost is it? This might seem the most obvious question of all time for Kilkenny to have Owen Cody back.
Sure, Owen Cody is top class. He's one of the premier forwards in the country. So, like, it's a boost from a player's perspective to have your teammate who is so, you know, who is so capable of producing on the big stage. Like, we've seen him in Croke Park explode, whether that be in Leinster finals or Ireland finals, when he's taken the fight to teams that are, you know, on top of Limerick, like, or on top of King, like Limerick when he got that goal. Like, he just has this ability to, I find him in the ability to create something out of nothing. Just me personally, there's a certain number of forwards in the country that even when you feel like you have them bottled up, do you know what I mean? Or you have them on the sideline, or you have them kind of in a place where they can do no damage, bang, they just create something. And there's like, I would say that's like the Gallant type person, you know, and Owen Cody is one of those people that could just create something that a team needs in a moment of need, you know? And like, I was just, as you were talking there, I was trying to map out the six forwards for Kilkenny. And I, you know, they kind of go under the radar a bit more. I'm kind of aimless at yourself, let's say, in the sense that, you know, maybe it's just the fact of the Leinster Championship, and they haven't had to be tested, you know, to a huge element this year. But like, I have Mullen, Don, I don't know where to put them. This way, I have Mullen at 10, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Put them anywhere now. You just name your six.
So go on, yeah. Mullen, Donnelly, Cody, Massey, TJ, Billy. Is that it?
So go again. Mullen, Cody, Donnelly, Massey, TJ, Billy.
Yeah. And then I was trying to place them, right? Yeah. So I said, okay, Mullen must be a 10 or 12, one or the other. Massey's going to be in a 13, I presume. Cody will be at the 15, will he?
Probably, yeah.
TJ
will
be at 14.
Yeah.
Billy at 12 and John at 11, is it?
Yeah.
That's a fair forward unit. And when I'm trying to assess teams, this is leading to the Cody question. When I'm trying to assess teams, well, I always look at I always point to the six forwards, right? Whose six forwards has the ability to create more damage, right? Because the backstory do so much in terms of structure, but the forward is very individual based. If you know what I'm trying to say, it's very individual based. If you have players who can create things individually, man on man, generally they get their team into a winning position. So if you look at Tipperary versus Galway last week, now the couple of forwards they had in the half forward, I think it was like 17 points from play they got. Okay, so they and a lot of the moves weren't crazy team moves that were started from the goalkeeper back. They were down to the individual making clever runs, picking the ball, taking on his man, etc., and shooting and scoring. So I look at the six forwards going, that is a serious six forwards right there. I'm not saying it's better than Tip, it's very close. But like, that has just crept under the radar a bit. Maybe because it feels like Massey has gone up levels. He's gone up a level, I think, or for me personally speaking, he's gone up a level or two this year. You know, TJ is maintaining a level, albeit not to what he was in his younger course. Mullen has got back to a level. You know, he's been in and out of the team, let's say, because of injury or whatnot. Donnelly has kept his level high from last year. Billy Ryan has gone to another level this year and utilised his pace something fierce. Now you've won Cody back in the mix. You know, so it's like a frightening six forwards. You think, right, who's the weak link? There's no one there, lads. There's nobody there at the moment. So to answer your question, for Owen Cody to be able to come back into that forward unit, it has a degree of completeness about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just seems they're all set. And from a team perspective, you know, mentally speaking, he's a great boost to get back though at the right time. You know, he's just at the right time whereby he's fit and healthy, probably has trained the last couple of weeks, probably in a position whereby he's fully healed up and ready to rock. So good place for Kilkenny.
Yeah, it's one of those benefits, Murph, of winning your province, isn't it? That you get yourself those extra few weeks whereby he wouldn't have to have been used, say, in a quarterfinal, like in the way if Kilkenny had to go through that route, you may well have to risk him. This time around, you can kind of ease him back in and you get that chance for these, I guess, bumps and bruises to try and cure them ahead of a semi-final.
Yeah, well, look, it's the biggest break you're going to get once the round robin kicks off is that go and win your provincial championship and get your 4 weeks. We look at it with Cork, and I was just reading one or two things that Pat Ryan was saying, and he was just saying something along the lines of basically not making it a disadvantage to have the 4 weeks off. Like, he was kind of trying to play it down. Like,
he said 4 weeks can be no excuse.
Yeah, it can be no excuse. He was almost trying to say that as if it's better to keep playing matches. I think he's trying to distract from the point of view that, not deliberately distract, but I think he's trying to keep his own team focused on the job in hand, that they didn't get complacent in 4 weeks off. Like, 4 weeks is absolutely ideal. There was times there before we used to have 6 weeks off, and that was a bit too much. Like, there is a fine balance between this, but 4 weeks is perfect because you have the week out of the other side of the match where you're resting a few lads. You're really getting a lot of time to boys who haven't, who didn't get game time, let's say, in Leinster or Munster finals. You're recuperating, you're watching quarterfinals. Lads have 2 weeks of great training. Like, it's a lovely little balance. And all the while, you have this semi-final coming down the track where you can keep an eye on quarterfinals and see who's coming through. And the likes of that then as well. Like, I mean, if you threw one match in the middle there, and it's the same, you know, for Tipperary, if they had, let's say, Alan Tynan, for example, or if they had Jason Ford, who they were trying to, you know, keep on the field, they had niggle, you'd prefer not to be throwing them into another game or have to deal with a quarterfinal where one of those players, you have to bring him through, because generally a lot of these injuries are fatigue injuries and they're niggles, and it's just trying to get that freshness back into players. So the 4 weeks is perfect. And, you know, I think a lot of teams are learning lessons from the last few years since this new system has come in. You know, getting the balance right after playing the league, coming into championship. There's so many different parts at different stages of the year a team is trying to get right. But one of the ones that still remains true, as it did, you know, 10 years ago in 15, is that the better route is to go through winning your province. Not just the fact that you get to win, you get a cup, but you get that time afterwards where you just get to manage your panel a little bit more. You get to get your head above water and get a bit of breathing space. So that's one constant. You know, that was before this new system came in, and it's going to carry on. So, yeah, look, Kilkenny, I think, seemed quietly happy. And the flip side, like we said, Pat Ryan, who's the counterpart to the other side, he's kind of, I suppose, I think from his point of view, he's staring down a Dublin match going, trying not to bring his players into the game the way the Limerick players came into it, in that maybe a little bit of complacency creeping in. Like, he's looking at this going, if my lads are firing and they're going well, there's no reason we shouldn't just go and win this match and be into an All-Ireland final. And then, you know, forget about last year. We're getting only 70 minutes from an All-Ireland. So I think that's, his angle is different from Derek Ling's angle.
Are you approaching this game, Murph? I know there's history between the counties that look for a long, long time, but have you, are you expecting a victory here? Like, are you kind of, is there any area where you're saying, I'm not sure about this?
No, not expecting at all. I genuinely believe this is 50-50. Like, I know a lot of people are saying, you know, a point here or there. Like, it really is. And I think so much of it will come down to form on the day. Like, people could look at Tipperary and say they came through a tougher route, which is true. Tipperary at different times throughout the year have been more consistent than Kilkenny, particularly even if you go back as far as the league game, the second last game, I'd say Kilkenny had, and I think it was Tipperary's second last game also, it was in Nolan Park. Tipperary were by far the better team that day, but both teams have went down different routes. How they've progressed as far as here, like, I'm really happy with Kilkenny coming into this game, but fine margins, like, in terms of one player, like, you kind of mentioned it there, Scale, about, like, you know, Owen Cody coming back, and these small things can tip the balance. One player getting traction in their corner of the field and dominating their position could just tip the scales for each team. So I'm not expecting a win. I'm going at it going, obviously, I hope Kilkenny win, and I know they can, and I believe they can. But I'm looking at it going, you know, Tipperary have serious quality around the field. They're going really well. They look hungry. They look aggressive. And they have threats. Like, we spoke last week with Jake Morris, like, outstanding. Darren McCarthy has been brilliant. Armin's been fantastic. You know, we saw flickers of Jason Ford again rising back to the level. It's not to say he dropped too far away from them, but, you know, Jason Ford had 4 points within the first 20 minutes the last day. Threats all over the field, and that's before you even get down to their back. So, like, I have a healthy respect for what this Tipperary team can do, and I genuinely, at the moment, like, we'll probably get to predictions later on, but it is 50-50. Do you know what genuinely is?
I have a question in the sense that, you know, when you played Clare in the semi-finals in years previous, you signed Mikey Butler onto Tony Kelly. Obviously, Tony Kelly's influence in Clare is huge. And I'm just thinking, is just Jake Morris at the present moment in current form have the same type of influence? Maybe not as heroic as Kelly has been for Clare, but you know, he's in that kind of form where he has a serious impact on Tipperary's kind of forward motion.
He does, yeah.
Will you see something like, and I know Kenny don't usually do it, unless it's kind of like a unicorn type person in a Tony Kelly, yeah. But will Mikey Butler be on Jake Morris is the question I want to ask you.
I don't know if he will. Like, where do you see Jake Morris starting this game, out of interest? I see him starting moving forward.
Yeah, so he could potentially have 15 on his back, let's say, but he'll play between 10 and 11 and 12.
Yeah.
Primarily on the kind of the between 10 and 12, it feels like.
Mm.
It feels like they move an awful lot laterally, and their Armand tries to stay in the middle of it.
They do, yeah. Like, I mean, Jake Morris likes to do these diagonal runs, cut across the play, get possession, and pop the ball over the bar and reset. Like, he's very snappy, he's very efficient about the way he operates. Generally, I think just Jake Morris, you know, will take the score in the last day. I think he came away with 4 points the last day, 4 points from play. Like, he's very effective. I think Kilkenny may look at it from the point of view of, they may go at him, or will they look, like, Mikey Butler is obviously a great kind of man marker that might sniff out his marker scoring goals. And I think that's somewhere where Kilkenny will go, right, a man going 50-50 with Jake Morris, be that, you know, Mikey Carey or whoever's going to be out in the half forward line, they take them up. They can go toe-to-toe with Jake Morris and maybe hold him to 2 points or whatever it is. But I think Kilkenny might look and go, well, who's the goal threat here that someone like Mikey Butler might be more suited to? Now, something we have seen previously is that, yeah, he might go after Jake Morris as he did with Tony Kelly a few years ago, and bringing him out to field actually still allowed him to go and hurl. So it is interesting to think about, but I would say in this game, the six forwards for Clare for Tipperary are quite evenly balanced in that they've all contributed very equally to Tipperary's success. Like, Darragh McCarthy had an outstanding league, wasn't as influential when it came into Championship. Now, some of that was obviously he missed the Cork game and was suspended after that, etc. But they all kind of have equal levels of influence. And Ormond is kind of the man at the moment who's kind of pulling quite a few strings around the centre position. But you're not going to put Mikey Butler out there. So I think, to be honest, when Kilkenny look at it as a whole, they'll go, look, all these lads pose significant threats. Do any one of them, on a given day, any one of them could become man of the match and could go out and shoot the lights out. But there's no form like a Tony Kelly, for example, that's in there, where Tony Kelly, if you stem him, you quite significantly hold back Clare's ability to score. So I don't think that threat is there. But he may well go after Morris, but I think, to be honest, Kilkenny will go first 10 minutes. Whoever comes into the corner, go with them. I'm talking about all positions. Go with them. See what formation they're going to try and throw at us. And from that, then be prepared to take player X or move off player X or whatever. You know what I mean? I think that's the way Kilkenny will go. I don't think they'll hinge it all on one player for this match.
Something to consider, Scal, coming into this one, is that when you go back and reflect on the Galway Tipperary game, Galway fluffed their lines a few times when they were through with goal chances. Are Kilkenny going to be presented with as many goal chances this weekend as Galway were?
From an efficiency perspective, I think they'll be far sharper than what Galway forwards were.
Oh, yeah.
The opportunity did present itself on a couple of occasions, particularly in the first half, where I think I counted four, where if that pass stuck or was better or the run was a bit more efficient, you'd say there could be a green flag here. And those opportunities, like when we go through the forwards that Kilkenny have, they have two things. And I love about Kilkenny forwards at the moment is one is they have the ability to play in any position. So I can envisage TJ in any of the six positions. I can envisage Mossy, Cody, anywhere at all. So that leaves, you know, a sense of question, like for Tipperary to manage. And when you have kind of, remember we said it before about Cork in Limerick in that final back in 21-22? Do you know what I mean? Where if you have defensive units, was it 21? Sorry, where there was it was a fair clipping, Will, whereby you have, if you're in a defensive position, right, and you have to be thinking and questioning things while you're in the middle of play, you're in a bit of trouble. You're in a bit of trouble, you know what I mean? Whereas so you can only prepare for so much, as far as I'm concerned, from a defensive perspective. But then forwards of this caliber are going to throw something different at you that you're going to have to think on your feet, which can create opportunities. That's my point. So when you ask, is there going to be goal opportunities? Absolutely, 100%. And there'll be team opportunities and individual opportunities. What I mean by that is people will go for it. Like if Cody gets the ball inside, you can be sure as hell he's going to take lads on, you know, himself as an individual. TJ is still imperious in the air. What can he create if the ball goes long? Do you mean they're going to bring lads for a spin? They're going to try to draw out Owen Connolly. Do you get me? Try to take them out of their positions of strength and just throw things at Tipperary that maybe they haven't seen this year so far. So, but I think that works both ways too, Will. Like, I think from the goal perspective, particularly for Tipperary, is they have the ability to run straight at you directly through the middle and get goals, let's say. So the likes of the McGraths, the Fords, they could be waiting inside, have runners coming through like Ormond and Jake Morris, who are so direct and so quick that they provide just the finishing opportunities to the lads inside. You know, so if I was trying to stem Tipperary, I'd be putting all my focus, to be honest, on positions 8 through 12 and trying to stop runners coming through there. I'd be happy enough to let them shoot from distance. You know, if we can do one-to-one and make them shoot from beyond your, like, your 65 or 50-yard line, I'm not too bad at that. Like Murph said, I just don't want them running through the heart of our defence trying to create opportunities for the sharpshooters inside. So, again, that's a question for the Kilkenny defence, which I always point towards it, and it feels like I'm being a prick, but the Kilkenny six positions, I always think is so pivotal to your setup, Murph. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so if Ormond or Morris pitch up at the 11 position, let's say, what are Kilkenny going to do? Like, are they going to tell their six to go with them? Are they going to tell the likes of Malai or Kinney to sit in front? You know, questions that there's people down there are much more qualified to answer than I, but it's just one area of focus that I think if you got that right, if you got that half back line kind of central position right, just you go a long way to winning. I think a long way to winning. Because if you get in top there, you basically kind of stem the major heartbeat of the Tipperary attack. Would you agree?
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Agree with you.
So who'll be at six? Who'll take up 11?
Well, I'd imagine...
I've got the questions, Steve, now, Will. Sorry, I've got the questions.
Oh, good. Go for it.
Because all are out, so I'm focusing on everybody else.
Well, I imagine Richie Reid is going to be there. Do you know? I'd imagine he is going to be there because one of the things we saw during... Like, they have a few lads who can play across the line there, but one of the things I think we saw during the league when Kenny was struggling to get a bit of form, Richie Reid came back against Limerick. He'd been injured up until that, and he came back and he steadied the ship. And I think something I had said at the time was that, you know, Richie, I think, is quite unassuming when people see him playing, in that he has great ability to get on the ball and he's a great distributor of the ball. But we quite often have seen lads rotate through the sixth position and, you know, heaps of hurling, well able to go and play the game, but sometimes get caught out of position a little bit more than Richie. And I think when we just saw, it's like John Conlon, like, okay, you could throw another centre back in there and they might go bursting forward, they might get a few points. But John Conlon sits and holds really well. And when he sits and he's able to do that, the rest of the lads around him seem to find their feet and do their job. And then you have the likes of Mikey Carey, who's we've seen make busting runs up the wing, like, you know, with great ability. Paddy Deegan then on the other wing. Like, we see lads then having the freedom to push forward because they know he sits quite well. So, like Blanchfield as well, he hurled outstanding during the league. And then, I suppose, got the red card, kind of was in and out of the team then as well, picked up an injury. So, like, there may have been things happening during training over the last few weeks where they feel might be very suited for this game in particular. And they might look at Blanche. I'm fairly sure he is.
Yeah,
fairly sure he is. And, like, Blanchfield...
It's hard to think more from imagine 12 months ago, you'd be looking at a Kilkenny team without Blanchfield in the team.
Completely, yeah. And I think quite a lot of it was the unfortunate situation of where he got the red card, but that was his own doing against Tipperary.
Yeah.
But then he got injured. And then so it's kind of, you're gone through a period there where other players have come in. Like, Bacchus even went in wing back there at one stage and did a good job. Like, you know, so other lads had been looked there and Kilkenny kind of found their feet. So, you know, mid-season trying to get back in. But he could very well be there on Sunday, you know. So there's options there. And look, at the other side, Tipperary have the options as well. So this is the thing, trying to pull the bones out of this one is it's a tasty one. But that's what makes it great. It makes it brilliant now because we'll all be experts on Monday Sunday when this is done.
I think you'll see Mullen back there a good bit. Like, Mullen obviously pitched up at the wing forward, but he spends a lot of time in the midfield area trying to pull out. And he becomes one or two things, either A, a facilitator or B, a shooter.
But sure, it's like Keane Lynch as well. Doesn't Keane Lynch do that where he starts in the half-hour position, but you see him dropping back past the midfield and picking up ball there? Like, it's
kind of like...
Oh, well, it's the ultimate question for a half-back is that, do I go or do I stay? That's always... If you're asking that question of the half-back line, that do I go or do I stay? And the thing is that if it's the type of player that drifts from that position and his own players pick him out, then you're forced to have to go because they're using him and you look like a clown standing at centre-back when Keane Lynch or Adrian Mullen or Ormond or whoever's picking up the ball. So those players who not only move from that position but are able to pick up ball and then even take a few shots, they ask serious questions of a centre-back who wants to sit. And that's the big question to be posed.
And the thing is, if that player is mobile, so if Adrian Mullen is mobile, like, so he's the ability to run at you, get away from you and also shoot and pass. Like, so for me, you have to go at him. You have to mark him.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if it's interesting, can you go a bit, like, you have to go at him. You can't leave him alone and try to figure out some difference from the field line. But if you sit back, he could hit 5 points. You know, unattended, picking up positions, being a super out ball for clean defence, and next thing your own attack, let's say, Tipperary's attack, is a 6 and 7 trying to mark Adrian Mullen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just it's a tough situation. And not everyone can play the position like he does or play that kind of role he does. to perfection. Mm. But oftentimes we've seen him come away at 4 points, 5 points, assisting goals, assisting whatever, because of his distribution and shooting. Like, he's a he's a fucking nightmare. He's like, sorry, excuse the language, but he's like.
Skell, what about the variety Tip have in their attack, though? Like, you already mentioned kind of the, was it 5-5-7, I think, came from the half-forward positions the last time. Like, yeah, every one of them had two points each by 25 minutes in the Galway game. Like, they have such a range of attackers. Like, once upon a time, it was a case of you might have to worry about that inside forward line, say, that were particularly lethal 5 or 6 years ago at Tipperary. But now, they've got such a good scoring range across all six.
Yeah, sometimes you look at forward units and you go, they have a good balance of work rate and power versus shooting and kind of class, you know? But when we look at the Tipperary attack, they have kind of, all their players are have the same attributes at the moment. They all have exactly what I said. They all work fierce hard. They all have pace. They all have, let's say, straight line attack and run ability, which is not that simple. But they can all take you on. They can all shoot from distance. Do you mean? And they can all finish. So like you're saying, there's no one player that is a perceived weak link, you know, in a forward unit, and it all keeps ticking together. And then you add in someone like Norm McGrath who can come in, or I don't know who can come in, and then add that extra kick in the last 15, 20 minutes, you know, when things begin to, you know, theoretically open up somewhat. But the only thing I have is I haven't been accustomed to this Tipperary attack until this year. So, you know, so McCarthy knew him from underage, but didn't think he was this, had this kind of level to him at senior this early. Same with Donoghue. Same with Ormond, to be fair. Do you mean they're just, what I was saying about the Kenny boys hitting levels this year, I've just, there's new Tipperary attackers that have got to a level this year and kind of spruced up the attack, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. All the while, as Murph said, you've got people like Ford and McGrath who are not rolling back the years, but hitting a steady line of form that is extremely efficient for their attack. But they don't have to do all the work. Sometimes, in the last number of years, you'd have to see, you know, again, being respectful, Seamus Cannell and Jason Ford having to do all the hard lifting, do you know what I mean, in terms of scoring. But now there seems to be just a great balance across the whole six forwards. Or sorry, I'm going to say eight forwards rather, Will, sorry, with the two boys coming in, McGrath and Donoghue as well. So, like, there is serious potential in this attack. And this serious potential in this attack for a long time to come. You know, it's not just there tomorrow. Like, they have the potential to be here for, like, 6, 7, 8 more years at a very, very high level, which is frightening to think of. And I go back to my earlier point, when I'm doing assessments in teams and trying to ask the questions, what questions would the opposition attack pose towards the... So what will Tipperary attack pose towards Kilkenny and how will Kilkenny counteract it? And like traditionally, Kilkenny will always have a set six. They'll keep their six backs in position. And I'm just thinking, how will Tip kind of counter that? How will they get Jake Morris and Armand on the ball deep, you know, if Adrian Mullen's out there? They're the questions I can't answer right now, because we see, even when we're making predictions, it's such a hard thing to do nowadays. Because we can make predictions of the games we've seen so far, but management and stats teams and analysis teams are so clever, they come up with little tweaks that we wouldn't have foreseen or anything in the case, and next thing results in 17 points in play from your half hour there. You know what I mean? So, but albeit, I will say, as I always say, there's an asterisk for that performance, because Galway were so poor, Will, to be fair.
Yeah.
They're going to meet an absolutely way different animal now come Sunday afternoon in the Kilkenny backs and midfield alike, because there'll be pressure applied to Tipperary that I don't think they'll have seen this year so far.
Don't worry, our predictions have gone so well. Look at Limerick against Dublin a couple of weeks ago. Fantastic. Accurate to the end is what we've been so far this season. Yeah. How awkward is this week going to be in your house, Murph, given you've got Tipperary and Kilkenny under one roof there?
Not very awkward, I don't think. I hope not.
Alpha, right? He's an alpha.
There was very little talk about it. I was with my in-laws at the weekend there as well, so there was very little talk about the game. It was all kept in good spirit. It'll be grand. It'll be grand. I'm working for the weekend. I'm doing the BBC for it, so I think the fact that we won't be sitting beside each other might be no harm, because look, she's well entitled to shout for Tipperary, so.
This man made the BBC, everybody. Who are you on the BBC with?
Neil McManus, I presume, I think. And I don't know. I don't know who the other player is going to be. Presumably, they look for, generally, as it was over the last years, a player that was involved this year, except for Austin Deason, player who was involved during the year, but now is out of championship. You know, so potentially you're looking at Limerick players, Galway players. Clare players, yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. Shane O'Donnell is on for the final, from what I understand, which is obviously
spoiler.
Nice. Well, it's not a spoiler. It's a great little addition to have the current hurler of the year on. But I'm unaware as of yet who the other person is going to be. But they've been good last year. Like, Seamus Flanagan was outstanding.
He's great. Yeah.
You know, a great insight as well. So it's great to get that insight from lads who have been on the field very recently.
Yeah, I don't think Tommy Niblock is going to chase you down for promoting their coverage of the final by saying that Shane O'Donnell's going to be on. So even if it's a spoiler,
well,
I think you're okay.
Thomas Niblock told me that a few weeks ago, so I've put the gun to his head now. Yeah, exactly.
Negotiations continue with Shane O'Donnell about being on the BBC for the final.
It might be, unless this isn't it, what football team have a Shane O'Donnell at the moment? Donegal have a Shane O'Donnell.
Donegal, yeah.
So unless he's completely booked the wrong fella.
I do like the idea that Paul Murphy of Kerry and Shane O'Donnell of Donegal turn up for the final and they just make do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Going, we booked the wrong lads. Wrong week. That's the problem, yeah.
Right. So he can't predict Skell. In fairness to Murph, he's just going to say Kilkenny. So over to you. Who's going to
I will just say this. I'll give Skell this moment. Just No, that's all. We have to go back to the line, the Tommy Walsh line. Kilkenny, because I just really want him to win. But I think, to be fair, like, if it was a case of... let's say Tipperary were light years ahead and Kilkenny were, you know, it looked like this could be a 10 or 12 point beating, like, it'd be pointless to call it any other direction. But yeah, it's just, look, at the moment, this game is just in the balance. But Skettle, off you go. I'll let you have at it.
This is difficult.
Yeah.
It's really difficult, because I'm splitting hairs here, but I'm trying to, history sometimes comes for a lot too, and I'm looking at Kilkenny in semi-finals, you know, in the last number of years, and they have, each time, they have exceeded my expectation, strictly speaking. I'm talking about the two semi-finals versus Clare, and even last year in Clare's, when they had all the momentum, you could say, I did not expect Clare to beat Kilkenny. I think I called Kilkenny 3 years in a row. I called Clare the first year.
Yeah, you did.
Kilkenny the second year, Kilkenny last year. So just this ability to show up on the big stage, Will. And it's not looking for a big player to make it, it's just from a team perspective, they just go, you know, they go to a different level in semi-final time.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I've seen them in semi-finals the last couple of years. They've performed each time. They've never been, you know, I would say hammered or outclassed much by the opposition. And that's the only thing that's pointing to me towards Kilkenny. Because from a 15 to 15 perspective, even their squad management, I can't separate them, to be honest.
Mm.
I'm just saying, Tipperary haven't been here in a while. I think it's been 6 years since they were in Croke Park.
They haven't been in Croke Park since they beat Kilkenny in 19 in the final.
Yeah, so, and I can't account for, like, I'm trying to account for the occasion and what would that have a potential impact on the players? Yeah, maybe not. Maybe it will. I don't know. You know what I mean?
I think a lot of their young players have played in All-Ireland finals over the last few years and stuff as well. I don't think that.
Maybe it's different nowadays. Maybe they don't care. Yeah. But I'm pointing towards the ability for Kilkenny to show up big time when the game is, you know, is of such magnitude like this. So I'm just going to go Kilkenny, but I'm going by the minimum. I'm going by a point.
Tipperary more All-Ireland winners than any of the panels that are left across the board coming into this weekend either. So there is this freshness about the teams potentially winning. It wasn't quite the, I think it was like 6-10, 20-85, which people were pointing out. It sounded like something that Skell puts down as fertiliser on his farm. But we just double-checked the figures.
6-10-85.
Yeah.
Why
does that know
the grass
was born? I was going to say that. Well, we must feel left. It was 85 in there. But Cork 2005 lost All Ireland. Dublin 38. Kilkenny 2015. And Tipperary 2019. So that's the last wins. There's actually, bizarrely enough, not that many games between Kilkenny and Tipperary. I bet you remember all of them because of how high profile they've been. But we've only had 8 in the last 20 years. Albeit, you're looking at, they were the finals 9, 10, 11, the semi-final in 2012, the qualifier where Henry made the comeback in 2013, the incredible final and final replay in 2014, the final which was won by Tipperary in 16, and the final that was won by Tipperary in 19. So, like, very rare meetings, but I would say all of them are incredibly memorable. And most of the other meetings are, just by the nature of the provincial championship, are semi-finals and finals when you go back through history as well. So an incredible storied rivalry. Tip going for 3 wins in a row between the teams, having won in 16 and 19. The only thing, Skell, that you brought up that I was about to jump in on, and I'll let you finish your point first, was the Kilkenny drift, which we saw against Clare. Second half, went out of the game a little bit in that semi-final last year. It has reared its head a few times during the year this year, even in Leinster, where Kilkenny went to win the title. Is that a concern? You can't do that against Tip.
No, I know you can't do that against Tipperary, but again, you have to consider the level of opposition that they faced at the time they faced them. I mean, I know what you're talking about.
Even considering Clare now last year in the semi-final, where Clare took over the second half.
I get that, and I can give you that too, but you, in terms of Leinster, right, Kilkenny were just kind of so far ahead of the opposition, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not talking about 4 or 5 points. I'm talking 12, 13, 14 points ahead of the opposition, that you can't say this is a really worrisome trend for me. You know what I mean? If they were in a position whereby they were 2 or 3 points up and then they just capitulate and collapse to get beaten, I'd say one thing, but they're not. They maintain the results. So, like, and I don't think, maybe I'm wrong now, but Murphy, come in, I don't think, let's say, Derek Ling would actually sit down and assess this for his team. I'd say he's just talking about it from a standard perspective. I think because the games were getting so far, there was such a gap developing between them and that position. Maybe it was just a slight little drop in concentration levels, slight little drop in execution or even ruthlessness, if you want to call it that. That can be fixed. That's fixed automatically by the occasion, Will. Automatically, that's all gone. So when you get to semi-final stage, you're at the business end, right? There is no room for concentration lapses or lack of ruthlessness. That's automatic, I think, Kinney. Is that fair to say, Murph?
Yeah, like I'd agree with you in terms of the one thing I when I saw this trend happening earlier in the year, like it happened against Wexford for the second half. But the one thing that it had in common was they absolutely were flying it in the first half against the team and then took their foot off the gas. Like in each scenario, they were ahead by at the minimum 13 points. So like Wexford, I don't know where they hit against 13 Wexford. It was about 10 to 12 anyway. Then against Dublin down in Nolan Park, it was about 15 points at that stage. And then against Galway in Leinster final, it was 13. And it was a concern where I was going, the games where they should be out the door, this thing of creeping in, of they take their foot off the gas. Like, there's not going to be anything more than 3 or 4 points in it at any stage in this game, which for either side is nothing to claw back. So for my thing was that I don't think it's a concern this time of the year, because it seems to be something that's brought on by beating the team very well. None of the rest of the teams that are here now, you're going to get that type of a lead on. So I don't think it is a concern for Derek.
No,
and like
not.
You said, it's something you can work on anyway.
But you know what, George, and a lot of teams don't have this, right? When the game's in the melting pot after such a situation whereby you get clawed back after having a big lead, you still need someone to go up and get a puck out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like, Kilkenny have that ability whereby when Galway got back to 4 points, you know, who went up and got the puck out? TJ Reid. He went up and clawed it out. I think 5 lads went up. He lays it, Adrian Mullen, bang, over the bar. The whole thing is settled again. So they have that ability to go up and be individual when they need to be, if you know what I'm saying, and do these things whereby a lad just goes up and get the fucking ball. You can do all the analysis you want and all the tactics you want and all the puck out strategies, but when you've got a situation where Murphy can just land it down to TJ Reid, he grabs it, here, Adrian, pint. That's an ability that a lot of teams don't have, that. And that's what Limerick have had for years with Hegarty and Morrissey and Lynch. That ability just to fuck it down there. Them lads will take care of it. See, you're what I'm trying to say. Them lads will take care of it.
No, just like the phrase was like, fuck it down there and he'll look
fuck out. Fuck it down there. Like, yeah, exactly. Whereas Galway don't have that. Galway didn't have that. You know what I mean? Clare didn't have it this year. Clare had it last year, Peter Lugan. Do you know what I mean? You need that person to go up and do it. So when this trend potentially pops his head up again, you can see this ball. You can see TJ coming to number 12. I guarantee, and down to TJ. It's that simple. And they get it.
I'll take up the interview with Billy Ryan this week. I was chatting to him after the Leinster final and I asked him about the trend. And he said again, he used the word drift. So that's what drifted into my mind, by the way. And he said the only good thing from Kilkenny's perspective is that they've been able to arrest the drift when it's happened. So for the Dublin game, him himself, he scored that second goal, which just kind of killed the game. It was a stake that was driven into the end of the match. And then similarly against Galway, where it looked like all the momentum was with Galway after the ball hits the net. Kilkenny kind of reset, and then when Mullen sticks over that point, you kind of feel, okay, Kilkenny are going to wrestle back control again. And they have that ability to do it, even when it feels like a game has gone against them. And the other thing is, I don't think there's any better inspiration for Kilkenny than a blue and gold shirt across the way, their biggest rivals. And I think that's going to be a cracking semi-final on Sunday. I'm going against you, Skell. I actually think Tipper are going to win this, but I don't see any team winning by more than 2 points. I mean, the bookmakers actually have this price perfectly. It's pretty much even across the board. I'm going to tip by two, yeah.
By two. I'm going Kilkenny by one. Murph, where are you going? I know you're going Kilkenny, but what's your
margin? Oh, Jesus. I'll go Kilkenny by two again.
The day will come now where one of us will go against our county.
That's what I thought he was going to do earlier, because you know, you kind of went, just before we ask Gail his prediction here, I just want to get it on the record, Tipperary by four.
Yeah. Oh god,
I know it. Like Kevin Keegan, I'd love it if he said it.
Right, Cork against Dublin Saturday, live at 98 FM, by the way, if you're at the radio, if you're driving around as opposed to being in the car watching Paul Murphy on the BBC or watching RT's coverage of that semi-final, you can listen to Ryan O'Dwyer and Stephen Gleeson, who lost it somewhat when Dublin won the last round against Limerick, I think perfectly understandably. So they're going to be back in the commentary position on 98 FM for us at the weekend. And Graham Mackay's comments struck me here, Skell. He reckoned that the small crowd actually hurt Limerick. I don't know if that's true. I mean, Graham McKay was on teams where Limerick played in Croke Park that was empty,
yeah,
and Limerick's level didn't drop.
I was very surprised with that kind of comment. I would associate that kind of comment to come out of fucking Galway as opposed to Limerick. You know what I mean? I wouldn't think that would come out of a team who has won so much and done so much and been so dominant in kind of every kind of environment. You know, they've played in, you know, wet conditions, dry conditions, big crowds, you know, hostile crowds away from home. They've dealt with red cards. They've dealt with referee issues. They've dealt with injuries. Like they've seemingly dealt with everything. But the thing that has potentially caught them is the small crowd in Croke Park. I can't.
It's a good way of putting it.
I can't make a correlate. Like, I can't make a draw, a solution. Or I can't. I don't think it's the issue at hand. I just think the hand has to go up. When you get beaten, right? If you're beaten and you perform well, fair enough. You're beaten by a better team. But if you get beaten, first thing you first is look at yourself. And did we perform to the best of our abilities? And the fact is they didn't, right? And that wasn't conditional based. That wasn't, you know, the crowd or the weather or the referee. That was just the execution of the players themselves didn't operate at their usual high level. That's it. And I guarantee if you ask them themselves, they'd come to the same conclusion, to be fair. And that's all it is. So, yes, it's as surprising as it was. They were soundly beaten by Dublin, and Dublin were deservedly qualified for Saturday's game. So,
yeah. Also, some people were wondering last week whether we were giving almost a backhanded compliment to Dublin by praising things like their physicality, their pace, their drive, their hunger within the game. I don't think at any point, Murph, we talked down Dublin's skill, ability. We talked about how well taken the two goals were. I don't think that's a backhanded compliment at all to say that a team are actually really well conditioned, really good at running the ball, and are really good at turning over one of the best teams of all time.
No, my only speculation is that maybe some people thought that we were surprised that Dublin showed all these things. Like, one of the things with Dublin is that at times over the last few years, we've said that these qualities have been absent. Like, when me and Skehill played against Dublin teams, go back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, first thing I thought of was physicality. Like, they wouldn't let you breathe. They were enormously fit players who were well able to run the ball, were always very intense. And they had the backing of the crowd. It was always intense when you went to Parnell Park. Even when they got in the road, it was intense. And, you know, they played with a savage hunger and aggression and all that stuff. And those qualities at different times were absent from the Dublin team over the last few years. It's not a damning indictment of the team or anything. It's just a fact. We hadn't seen it. And again, I go back to a game, for example, their quarterfinal last year against Cork. Spoke about numerous times over the last few weeks because comparable to the Limerick performance there a few weeks ago, it was like a different team altogether, but it was made up basically of the same main players throughout the team, and a vast majority were the very same. The difference was just the attitude. Okay, change of management and so on probably instilled a different type of siege mentality, different type of attitude, all those different things. But absolutely not a backhanded comment. I would say the only reason that we said it was because it was evident, it was there, it was present on the day, and also possibly because it's not something we'd associate with Dublin teams over the last few years who maybe at different times had been lacking this, where at times where they maybe played lovely passages of play, Donal Burke would come away with 10 points, etc. But maybe they weren't as physical as they could have been with teams, they weren't laying a hand on the team. And then other days where, you know, to be honest, maybe it was lacking a small bit of the touch was off, the skill was off, there was no link to their play. We may have been looking at it going, look, these are a very physical team, etc., but they're just lacking a bit of skill. But everything came together in that match. And like, it, people shouldn't take that as a backhanded comment. A lot of times when you're looking at these games, you're saying what you see, and that's exactly it. And when we're saying about Limerick, for example, we didn't see that aggression, we didn't see that physicality, we didn't see all those things that were displayed by Dublin, and that's simply it. You know, it's huge credit to Dublin, but it's at no stage was it backhanded comments. It was just what we were seeing.
Yeah, I think it was intended in that way at all. And I've noticed again that with the Galway supporter there, whose comment I have now managed to lose at this point, which is said that basically all of the qualities that were on show from Dublin was what was lacking from Galway. Which is,
yeah, exactly. Again, yeah. And like, that's exactly it. Like, you know, if we're sitting here this time next year and Galway have got a renewed vigour and they're going back at teams and they're showing real signs of contempt for the opposition and hunger and aggression, well, we'll be saying, yeah, it's evident now, we can see it, and it's light years away from where they were in quarterfinal in 2025, etc. But, you know, where Dublin are now...
it's new ground. What's
that?
Isn't it? So, like, I've listened to everything you were saying there about Dublin in the past when we played against them, but their performance against Limerick is new ground. We've never seen Dublin... We've seen Dublin perform well. You know what I mean? And knock off teams like knock off teams. But truthfully speaking, we weren't at the level of Limerick at that time, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So what Dublin produced like 2 weeks ago is new ground.
Yeah.
We've never seen it. So that's why we're surprised. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not where we're giving backhand compliments. We've just seen X level from Dublin. Now they've gone to Y level. And now the big question is, from my perspective, is can they maintain it against Cork? Can they do it again?
Mm.
Right. And not be a surprise, you know?
But that's the big thing, like, as in, there is no more surprises anymore. Like, the thing is that the cat is out of the bag now. Like, this was a level, exactly as you were saying, Skell, it's new ground. It's a new standard for this team to be held against. And we've seen it now, so Cork can't be surprised. And that's where that goes against Dublin now. But that's what you want. You want to be a team that people just go, lads, we have to be at the tip of our game. We have to be performing really well here to beat these lads. And that's the flip side of the coin of when you get to ambush a team 1 week, you don't get that ambush anymore. It's gone for a long time after that. The one thing that will steal the mind of these Cork lads from the moment they watched that Limerick game was that, geez, lads, these lads are going to run hard at us. They're playing with, again, I'll use that word, contempt. They don't care who we are. They're also playing with a freedom because the pressure is on Cork to win this game. The pressure is not on Dublin to perform. Mm. Dublin are in bonus territory at this age. Again, not a backhanded comment, just a fact. Like at the end of the year, if you said Dublin will be in the top four, you would have went, no, they're not going to be in All-Ireland semi-final. It's too soon for them, possibly over the next few years, but it just looks like it's too soon for them. Well, here they are now. And the thing is now is because there's no expectation on their shoulders, they can go and throw the kitchen sink at Cork here, and Cork have to deal with that because the expectation's on Cork to deal with that. So, like, realistically for me, Saturday evening, what I'm expecting to see is this Dublin team starting really, really well. Like, it'd be such a pity if they didn't start well because they've gotten here now. And this is a fantastic chance. Like, it's sold out, isn't it? As good as sold out.
Yeah.
Sold out for Dublin hurlers. It's fantastic. Like, this is brilliant. And this one game alone, never mind the last game, this one game alone, what it'll do for buy-in into Dublin hurling, like a kind of a renewed generation of buy-in where the potential is there that you will play in huge games at Croke Park and potentially All-Ireland finals, as this Dublin team may do. If that carrot is there, that's huge for Dublin. So there's so much packed into this Saturday night that why wouldn't you go and throw the shackles off? And if Cork beat you, Cork beat you. Mm. Go and throw everything at them. And who knows? Because the thing is, the longer this game goes on than Dublin stay in it, the cagier it gets for Cork. Like, I mean, people will be expecting Cork to win to this game, absorb what Dublin are throwing at them for 40 minutes, 45, 50 minutes. And this sounds all very familiar to us, like what people were expecting Limerick to do. But if suddenly you're coming down the home straight 20 minutes to go, and this Dublin team is still unrelenting, you're in bother. Like, you will be in bother then. And that is the challenge again for Dublin emotionally, never mind physically, they're physically able to do it, emotionally get back to that level. Treat Cork the same way you treated Limerick and let them worry about that then afterwards. Let Cork lads worry about how they deal with you. But just go at them and play with the freedom and the abandonment. The only thing I will say with it, though, is that it's going to be very hard to do because this Cork team won't give Dublin the space that that Limerick did, because I think that space was born out of a bit of a lack of respect for this Dublin team and the Dublin team being written off. I don't think Cork are going to do the same thing because they've been forewarned well in advance now.
Yeah, the YouTube comments last week, by the way, I think were the most we ever had, 130-odd, I think, from last week. I'm going to ignore two of them. I did address them on Twitter because it was just so out there that one was Keane Lynch is massively overrated, was one of them. I was kind of like, in touch on that. It was obviously sucking a lot of people in to comment underneath it. And the other one was that Limerick can no longer be considered a great team after losing two championship games in a row. It was kind of like,
Was that fishing though? Was that someone deliberately fishing, or did it seem that it was a case of?
I think it was more a case of you can't call them the greatest team of all time. And this is the proof.
But it was a genuine.
I think it was quite genuine. Yeah.
No, that's not. No, I can't get behind that.
Look, if you've got two working eyes and you've seen Limerick over the last 2 years.
I mean, I don't even think you need that.
I did like Dublin's Fair Cities comment though. Here's one dub anyway that won't be taking any issue with any predictions you made about Dublin, little or no chance. I thought the exact same as most people. I expected lots of energy and a big performance, though I still expected Limerick's quality would ultimately win out comfortably in the end. Also, I thought it was a certain red card for Crummy. I said it on first viewing. Why do people from the county who gets a red card often find it impossible to admit it? We had Liam Rush on the Sunday game bizarrely saying no red, reminding me of some little Kenny pundits back in 2019 with the Richie Hogan hit in the All-Ireland final, when Shefflin said it was no red card. So I looked again. There's a good point in there about the fact that, you know, natural biases seem to come into things a little bit as well. Crummy did go to appeal last week and he lost the appeal, which I wasn't totally surprised by, Skell, because we all felt it was a very difficult one. Like, you can't exactly prove that there wasn't, you know, use of the arm which hits his opponent in Garrod Hegarty's case. It was going to be very difficult to get off that, wasn't it?
Well, I think it's actually impossible. I didn't think they'd go for appeal, to be honest, Will. I thought they'd take their medicine and move on, to be fair. But God loves a trier, because when you look at the evidence, and like the evidence for me, like, is very damning, because you've got multiple angles. Mm. Like, you've got a front angle, side angle, back angle, and then you've got his own reaction. Then you've got the referee in their position, the linesman. Everything just kind of came together perfectly for that instance to warrant a red card. And it was. And it was done. And the referee and his team gave the correct decision, in my opinion. So I was surprised that Dublin tried it. But okay, when you get to this territory, you have to try it. You know, who knows?
It's a free swing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to end up in the exact same position where you start. Straight up. The best thing that happens is he lines up at number 6 again for you. So, like, he's a huge loss. But they've shown that they have the heart and will to go on without him. And now they have numerical parity again. They have 15 lads in the team. So they're in a better position now than the finish against Limerick. So
the only thing about not having a Murph is that you're reacting to a situation on the field, and it almost galvanizes everyone when there is a red card, versus a starting situation where Chris Crummy isn't available. Like, how much of a loss is Chris Crummy for Dublin now at the weekend? Because I'm assuming he would have probably taken up Barrett, maybe?
Barrett, Fitzgibbon. I'd be more inclined to say Barrett now than Fitzgibbon. Mm. Like, you'd be tagging a runner onto Fitzgibbon because he's going to travel around, whereas Barrett holds the fort there, does move in his own right, but he more kind of drifts across between the 11 or the 10 to 12 areas and drifts along there. But a serious athlete in his own right. I think they would have been looking really for Chris Crummy to mark Barrett in the centre, but go and hurl his own game as well, because Crummy is an outstanding player. He's been the real mainstay of that Dublin team for the last few years, and has played in the forwards and the backs as well. Like, they've moved him no more than Liam Rush over the years and so on. Like, they've moved him around as they've needed him in different places. But, you know, he's the leader of that team. He's not only the captain on paper, he is the leader of that team. And he's been exemplary for them over the years as well. So, it is such a pity that he's not part of this. I'd agree with you as well in that, you know, when you know he's, or when you find out that he's being sent off and he's on the field, players don't have time to react. They just have time to just go and not think about it. Right. Whereas you've had time to think about it now that he won't be there. So you don't get the same emotional reaction of him being absent on the day. But I'm sure, like, from what I've seen of Niall O'Callaghan over the last few weeks, he and even a few things I've heard about him, you know, instilling the kind of the attitude of a high performance athlete. I've heard different things about him, you know, talking about Michael Jordan and different things to the Dublin team in terms of getting that, you know, attitude into the team and that hunger into the team. I think he'll look at this and go, bit of a siege mentality again in terms of, look at, we didn't get him off, et cetera, whatever way you want to put it, and use that as emotional fuel to say, look, that our captain's going to be on the line. He'd love to play in an All-Ireland final. Let's get him to an All-Ireland final. Let's give this team a chance where Chris Crummy can actually tug out in an All-Ireland final and maybe tap into that emotional side of it. Because, like, realistically, what else can you do? You know, you can feel down in the dumps that you don't have one of your best players. You can just get on with it. Like, you know, get on with it. And, you know, there's plenty of players down through the years have been missing in big games like this, and the team has rose up and performed as a result. It also may act as a small bit of a distraction for the team as well. Like, you know, a bit of the talk after the game was Chris Crummy and the red card, and will he get off it, won't he get off it? So, you know, from what I've seen of Niall O'Callaghan, he's well able to use these things, if there is such a thing, in a positive manner for the team in terms of motivating the team, getting the team focused and saying, listen, lads, like, we did this, we beat Limerick without Chris Crummy for 55 minutes. So why can't we go out against Cork with 15 players on the field and there's plenty more lads to come in, etc., and have a real tilt at Cork? It's all you can do at this stage. Why would you do anything else?
So Pat Ryan had his media afternoon today as well, so he revealed some of the injury news. The bad news from a Cork perspective is that we know that Seamus Harney is going to miss out. He was really good in the Munster final. He's picked up a hamstring injury, so he's probably going to be a doubt for the All-Ireland final as well, if they're to qualify. It's a tricky part about picking up one of these this time of year, Skell. So it looks like Melrick and O'Leary are going to come back in as options in defence. Again, I was chatting to O'Leary a couple of weeks ago after the Munster final, and he said it was kind of a knock was the reason that he couldn't start, but he reckoned he'd be well back with the long break that they had. And Melrick is now coming back from that hand injury as well. So it looks like they're getting two in and they're losing Harnedy. Is that a fair swap?
I suppose when we spoke a couple of weeks ago, I was putting value on the fact that Cork had numerous forwards of a high level that can pop into their formation without really missing a beat. You know, but what I spoke about when I was talking about TJ with regard to Kilkenny and his ability to win that high ball, that kind of get up and get that dirty one during in time of need. Because what happens is when the game gets into kind of 65 minutes and beyond, and if it's in the melting pot, these kind of lovely puck outs into space just begin to dissipate. It becomes down to man v man, who's the ability to win the break or win the ball. And Harney's one of those guys, to be fair. He's able to go up and get it for Cork. But there's great value in the fact they're getting two major defencemen back. And they have able replacements in the line of, whether it be, you know, Healy, for example, Jim Healy. I keep speaking about this guy because he's young, exuberant, and fits in perfect. We saw the Mustafa, what he's able to do. You know, so he's in Kingston, Lahan. You know, they have able-bodied replacements. It's not an issue. I don't think the forwards are going to skip a beat, to be fair. But I can't differentiate between who's more valuable, two defensemen or one forward. I don't think that's fair. I can't say, oh, no, definitely defensemen. No. I think it's an equal balance. I don't think the Cork team, right, will be suffering too much.
Okay. Fair looks enough. Looks like Rob Downey's going to be okay as well. So that's good news. Again, he's been nursing an injury really for a few weeks and going back to the semi.
Can I ask a genuine question about Rob Downey? Is he their most genuine question? I'm not trying to be ridiculous here. Is he their most important player at the moment?
I think he is.
Yeah.
I think he is, in terms of that, like, you can have loads of skill and different things around the pitch, and Cork have displayed lots of aggression and work rate and all those things. But Rob Downey is just that presence at centre back where I'm just going, and his goal in the All-Ireland final last year, for example, like, just this he looks so relaxed the way he's playing.
Won't be a better goal in an All-Ireland final that then gets upstaged by another goal in an All-Ireland final ever. It'll be the best ever second best goal in an All-Ireland final.
Absolutely. It's amazing, actually. It completely was dwarfed out by Tony Kelly, wasn't it? Like, you know, but that just goes to show you, like, what he can do. Like, we talk about Kyle Hayes and these lads going bolting up the middle. Rob Downey doesn't do it that often, but has showed the ability that he has the hurling, can do it when he wants as well. But yeah, no, I'd agree with you, Skell. I think his presence there ties up the natural talent that they have really nicely and kind of just grounds them and has them pointed in the right direction.
Yeah.
Right, so that's the injury news. That's what came out of Pat Ryan's press day this afternoon. Animal Cahy was very quick to pull you up here, Murph, about last week, because you were talking about Cork being favourites already. And this is on the Spotify, which again was hopping with comments in the week just gone by. And we always do encourage them. I certainly read all of them. I think the lads generally have a quick read as well. Excuse me, Murph. Cork are not favourites. That's Kilkenny. Let us play Dublin in peace. This match will definitely be a sellout, which we were kind of wondering about last week as well. Because Cork fans are slightly insane, and Dublin will now be well behind their lads as well.
Well, Cork are favourites.
Yeah,
they will continue to be favourites. And if you want to be like, what do they want? Do Cork want to win the All-Ireland and start next year and be said, no, you're actually underdogs, lads. You're underdogs. You're not the favourites at all. So, like, I don't know. I don't get this at all. You should own it. Just own it. You're the favourites. It's actually such a hard argument to say that they're not the favourites. Like, I'd love, if you sat here and said, Kenny are the favourites for the All-Ireland, and you were correct, I would say, fantastic. That's absolutely brilliant. I love it. I don't care. I don't get why you'd play it down.
Shut up. You're in the position now where they're not favourites, right?
So, and at the same time,
you're saying that with complete confidence. I'd love their favourites. But hey.
I'd love it. Go back to Kevin Keegan. I would love it.
Classic.
It's just like automatically of, like, you know, we spoke about so much last week. I don't even remember saying they were favourites, but I'm sure I did.
Hold on. So you would have been favourites with Kilkenny for, I would say, you can say if I'm wrong here, Skell, probably 90% of the games they played, I'd say Kilkenny were favourites when you were playing.
I wouldn't say that. At the end,
I mean, across all games now. Nearly every game you would have been favourites.
Across every time we played Kilkenny, single time they were favourites.
Oh, sorry, in Skell.
Yeah, our time, is it?
No, I mean, in your time playing, Murph, given that it was a pretty golden period for Kilkenny, I know obviously towards the end of it, you weren't winning like every year, like you were probably in the middle of your career. But when you were in your absolute pump, with the exception of, and I'd say you were favourites in most of the All-Ireland finals you hurled in as well, you were probably favourites all the time. Like, did you ever, was that ever a concern? You know, when we talk about complacency and we talk about everything else, did that ever actually seep into your mindset ever?
No, not really, to be honest. Like, the times where we underperformed, it wasn't because we recognized we were favorites and it somehow made us dip our performance. I think it was more because the team we played against maybe up their level, and maybe we kind of, like, I'm tired of talking of the boys in 2012, but that game would have been an ample example of them boys performing really well, and then us, we would have felt underperformed as well. Not that it takes away from them, they hammered the light out of us and deserved to win, but it was a reminder that if you drop your standards by 2 or 3%, you know, you were going to get beaten. The tag favorites, it was always something that we didn't have it in the dressing room. It wasn't present. It was kind of a thing where Brian might dismiss it by or account for it by saying, listen, lads, let the paper say what they want, let all these lads say what they want, we only focus on this game. And because I think players, I joined a dressing room where players were already doing that. So I just had to step in line and just carry on with that. Like it was very fortunate to step into that dressing room, but it never played a factor. If anything, that's heard were favourites. We would have said, yeah, brilliant. That's because, you know, we work hard or whatever. We heard Seamus Flanagan saying that, you know, last year and so on, that you get into this mindset of, you know, we outwork teams, et cetera, and all that sort of stuff. So maybe use it that way. But the thing is, if you're going to be competitive, and no more than we've played Galway, I think 2018, 2017, 18, they would have been the favourites against us because they actually started going, they were going really well then, obviously went on to win All-Irelands, et cetera. But if you want to go and be in an All-Ireland final or be an All-Ireland champions, essentially at the end of the day, as all four teams left in the championship are, if they want to be All-Ireland champions, part of the package you get with that is you then enter games as being favourite where every team wants to take a scalp off you. And we spoke about it over the last few years with Limerick. When Limerick go to town, whether it's a match in February or whether it's a match in April or whether it's a match in August or July, teams want to take a scalp off Limerick because they're the standard bearers. They're the team that everybody marks themselves against. So let's say Cork go in the All-Ireland this year. You can't hide from the fact anymore. So you might as well just own it at the earliest opportunity that you are favourites and own that tag. Because the bottom line is, if you can't perform with that tag, you're probably never going to win an All-Ireland anyway, if that's the case. Because at some stage, you're going to come to the summit and you're going to be favourites. And if you can't perform, well, you know, there's no point in aspiring to be All-Ireland champion. So it was never a factor, I don't think, in our dressing room. But like I said, I had a lot of lads there who...
When did you join? What year?
2011.
2011, yeah.
So were you joining in 2011? So by that time, you had 7-1 in the 10 years previous.
Yeah, but that time you were in the dressing room, like Henry had seven. Like so there was lads seven, six, five All-Ireland medals, like, do you know? So like you were just joining, you're just following their lead, like, you know? So like I think, and that, you know what, that's another thing where these Cork lads have more of an experience than I would in that regard, because they're now assuming the mantle from Limerick. And a lot of these boys don't have that experience of having the mantle of being favourites. But I don't think it bothers the Cork players. I think it potentially might bother the supporters more than it bothers the players, because these lads want to be there. So I think it's more superstition with Cork supporters than it is with like they had no problem with it around 99. They had no problem with it in 2004 and 5. You know, it was just part of Cork.
I think as well, there's a big difference between, say, the nonsense that is a bookmaker paying out them after the league final for the Liam McCarthy versus I think very fairly at this stage, having an expectation that now, having won a Munster, having beaten Limerick last year, having taken Clare to extra time, that this feels like it's Cork's time to kick on and win the Liam McCarthy again. It's perfectly fair to have that expectation on them. That's totally different to blowing them up artificially in the way that we probably saw. I know that annoyed a few of the Cork management team, Ryan, Sherlock, a few of them talked about ahead of the Munster final and said it was just nonsense. And it kind of does seep into maybe supporters and into players' heads a little bit. When it comes to this game though, Scal, obviously Cork are going to have to be on it, or otherwise we've already mentioned that Dublin are an incredibly threatening team. I think back about last year, right? And it was a really kind of scratchy performance by both teams in a way in Semple Stadium in the quarterfinal. But Dublin were still within a shout of it. If Dublin can restrict Cork in the way they did that year, last year, and also bring the scoring and the intensity and the skill that they showed the last day, Dublin won't be total rank outsiders, will they?
Well, at the minute, their current position is they are rank outsiders. You know, you'd have to say there's probably a potential 6 or 7 point difference at the minute. And the landscape last year versus this year is strikingly different, because what Dublin have done this year is they have produced a performance that I think, with all fairness here, right, even people within their own country didn't think was possible.
Yeah.
If you're against the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest team of all time. So you're looking at a level that was produced by a team that they've never seen before or never grown accustomed to. And the question is, can they do it again? That's where the question is. It's not about last year and last year's game. I think last year's game, truthfully speaking, is irrelevant, because different personnel, different management teams. I don't think Dublin had even a fraction of the belief they have this year, to be honest. So last year for me is, look, it's relevant. It's gone. This year, I put more focus on the fact 2 weeks ago that they took down Limerick. And that's where, you know, the performance from Cork will stem from. It'll come from belief that they're able to beat Limerick, the belief that they're able to perform at a level that can beat Limerick, belief that they can, you know, take on a full house with their own people inside and take on a team that's perceived better than them. So if I'm looking at a performance or where to draw a performance from, just draw it from 2 weeks ago. Don't draw last year. Last year's relevant. Forget about last year, because ultimately you went home beaten last year. So the amount of positives you can take from last year is a fraction in comparison to the positives you can take from 2 weeks ago. And like, I was wondering, again, O'Callaghan seems like a very sharp man, shrewd man, emotionally controlled, you could say, on the sideline. will he develop something new? Will they go the exact same way they went against Limerick in terms of their pattern of play? Will he have something, you know, up his sleeve? I don't know. Is that within their capabilities at the moment? Potentially, maybe not. These are all questions I'm asking, you know, for this moment in time. But I'm saying if they can produce the same level of energy, particularly around the middle and the tackle, that's where they just annihilate Limerick, to be fair, lads. Should their course through them with a shout? Because we've seen Cork, let's say, Cork's energy comes from 8 through 12, doesn't it? Those those five positions, 8 through 12, the ability to get themselves into open space to deliver a lovely ball into the full forward line who can do, you know, untold damage, as you want to call it. But if they can somehow stem the supply from that area, make it a dogfight, make the ball going to the full forward line kind of 50-50, give your defenders a chance, give them a man-to-man chance whereby they're not marking space and the man, then they've got a great foothold in the game, haven't they? But if that has to happen early, as you will, from my perspective. You can't let Cork strike up a league. Look, I was saying, you know, I think we were saying rather, was it back in the league game we were saying Cork are favourite Sterling? That's how far back we went. There was a particular league game played against Clare, was it, lads? Where they struck five or six goals.
The one Ennis, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that far. It's a year ago, but it's not that far.
A couple months ago.
Far back, yeah, whereby they produced performance at a level that we haven't seen from Cork. And we're saying, geez, they're favourite Sterling. You can't let that happen. You can't let them open you up and get down for goals. The most important man from Dublin for me, from my perspective, on Saturday is Sean Brennan. Hmm. If he keeps the clean sheet again and controls the puck out game within the game, Dublin go a long way. I mean, the fact that he kept a clean sheet against Limerick and controlled the puck out game really well in the game, you know, that facilitated Dublin's kind of foothold, their grasp on the game, particularly when things go late on, particularly when Murphy's on about the come down the stretch in the last 15 minutes. It's critical that you do everything right, you know, particularly as a goalie, that you don't give away the ball needlessly. You don't have turnovers. We saw, and I watched them, the football yesterday, one or two kickouts, and the game just turns. It just turns. Yeah. You can see the goal. The whole thing is gone from you. You know what I mean? So big moments happen in big games, but you have to make sure they're on your side. You know, so Sean Brennan, for me, is the main guy for Dublin. If he can keep a clean sheet, win the puck out game, you know, he'll help his team be in the game, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? But I can't see a situation whereby if Cork get goals and they get their tail up like we've seen before, it's going to be very hard for Dublin to claw back.
Before I ask you about your prediction, have we just witnessed a road to Damascus moment here from James Gallery? Said, I was watching the football and almost said it with a certain amount of joy. This is a guy who 4 years ago sounded like a guy who put a spike through a Gaelic football.
And he's mentioned it a few times over the last few weeks.
I'm big enough to admit, right, that the rules that were brought in...
We know you're big.
Have greatly benefited the game. I thought the game up to this year was absolutely shite. I thought it was
horrendous. It's been unbelievable this year now.
Mm. Yeah, the game this year, it's for the first year in a long time in my memory, it's overshadowed the hurling.
Well, I tell you what they should do.
Overtaking the hurling.
There's two topical things in the news at the moment. And one is that Jim Gavin has innovated this new football system, or he's brought it in. And he's basically changed the whole system. And also there's a spot coming up for president there in November. So I think just slam the two of them together and Jim Gavin, make him president and just off you go into the sunset, because it's been ridiculous. Like, in fairness, like his crew sat down and the rest of the team there. And like Kerry were the first football team to score 30 points without a goal in Croke Park over the
Insane.
Weekend. Unbelievable. We pride ourselves in hurling. One of the big things is that how high scoring it is. And we spoke about games 20 years ago there. We'll go back 30 years ago, just to be sure. You know, finishing up 112 to 110 in championship matches, where the 30 points is the mark now. Like, we pride ourselves on high-scoring games. It's fantastic that football has gone to that location as well, because, it's just some of the games have been brilliant anyway. But that's for the football pot. I won't steal their thunder.
Again, the quote we just got there was, Gaelic football has surpassed hurling this summer.
It's probably a fair comment in terms of the broad range of excitement. I think that's...
But the thing is, as well, you have to understand is that the football, the opportunity for football to showcase the skills is tenfold to hurling because of the amount of games with equal level opposition. What does hurling a disservice, and I don't want to go back to it, is certain games that are put on show that don't need to be on show at all. Like we talked about the preliminary quarterfinals, obviously you remember that. Mm. Those situations don't help the game whatsoever. Do you know what I mean? Whereas the football teams are horsed into a group together whereby it doesn't matter, you know, the Galway football group, for example, Armagh, Dublin, and was it Jerry?
The group of death, and they're all dead before the semi-final.
Like, that's a fair group. Like, Do you know what I mean? That's a fair group.
The headlines are writing themselves here now. So
I know. The worst part is maybe we should have been on the football pod this week.
I was actually saying, I sent it into the group before where Sean Kavanagh predicted it was going to be a Galway Armagh Ireland final. And I saw it. It was an article yesterday. I think it was in The Independent. And I was just like, or RT actually, I think it was. And I was like, Sean, I've been there. I've picked two teams and they're out in their arse. And then I'm sitting there going, honestly, I do know something. But I just...
Oh, Murph, are you going Cork by 10 points? He didn't say no.
He agonized over slightly.
It's a win-win here. If I go Cork by 10 points and Dublin beat them, it's three in a row for me where I get to go. I'll go Cork by 7. I'm weighing off that Dublin just perform again, and there's just something in this game, you know. I know a lot of people will be saying, like, why are we writing off Dublin, etc. It's a different game than the Limerick game is going to be now, because that performance that Dublin put in, like, Limerick could have won that falling over the line also. Like, they could have got their few chances and they could have won the game. Cork are coming at this game now going, lads, don't let this game get cagey. Let's just go and shoot the lights out. And I also think, you know, the likes of Connolly and Hayes there up front, who don't need a whole lot to get a goal. They just need the ball landed on top of them and brute force strength. Hitting the back of the net against this Dublin team in a full Croke Park now could have an impact on them. So, look, I'm going to go Cork by 7. That's what I'll go with.
Skell?
Yeah. A question for the Dublin folks is emotional control, Will? What I mean by that is, like, when Cork get running, yeah, and it's a full house and there's a big red wave coming, can they stem it? Can they stop it? Do you know what I mean? Can they stop it and get back in the game as opposed to letting it get out of control? That's the big question I have. Yeah. And I just see that red wave coming. I just see it coming. Because the red wave comes from all angles. We've seen before systematically the way that they form in their forward unit is deadly. It's really deadly. And they're miserly at the back too. So it's when I look at all those potential issues for the Dublin defence, I'm like, geez, have they the answers? And I don't know. I don't think they have at the minute. I'm going to say, Murph, I'm covering it. I'm saying 7 or 8, yeah.
Like a big thing to follow on from you, Scott, there is one of the things where I think it comes with being around for a while, and this isn't, you know, I'm definitely not talking down on any of these Dublin players at all. They were brilliant in the last game, and I think they've a good few years ahead of them here now where they could be really competing. But let's say on Saturday now, and they go toe-to-toe with Cork for 10 or 15 minutes, and it's going really well, and then suddenly the net rattles in Croke Park and there's 82,000 people in it there. Yeah. That'll, if there's any doubt in your mind there, and like this is something that the Dublin players have to deal with, if there's any doubt in your mind there when suddenly the stands erupt with 82,000 people and the balls hit the net, you know, do you believe then that you're going to win? Like that's a question we've all been asked. Gail, you've felt that feeling where you're like, this is a cauldron here and the ball has hit the net and the place shakes and you go, can we react to go down the far end? You know, there's teams there, Limerick have built up the credit in the bank where they can go down the other field and react to Cork or whoever. But that's a question that is yet unanswered with this Dublin team. Like, yeah. Fantastic performance last day, but there's now other things that are going to come down the line to come with the fact of being in the All-Ireland semi-final. Like, that's one question. After 15 minutes, go on.
Don't you know that the rest of the reason I rose that point is because you and I know. See, 99.9% of the people that listen to this pod don't know what that feels like. When you're in the middle of it, okay, and something happens where a team gets a major milestone score and they shoot a goal against you and the place drops with no, you can't hear yourself think. Fuck. Do you know what I mean? For a moment, you're going, oh, fuck. Do you know what I mean? Trying to regulate your emotion, get back to task, right, is not simple. The only reason you can do it is because you've done it before. So it's easy to do it again once you've done it before, but when you have done it before, it's like, this is new territory, and every person in the Dublin team is tested individually, if you know what I'm saying, because they never would have encountered this level, maybe Hugh has, but they never would encounter this level of noise, you know, and intimidation from opposition, you could say, true noise.
So
I think it's very important. Like, people are saying, you're talking, no, we've been there, we've seen it and heard it. It is a difficult place to come back from if a team gets run against you. It's tough. So that's the question.
Like, even just to paint the picture even more, like those type of scenarios, like where I'll use an example. When we played Yee in the All Ireland final in 2012, Canning got that goal. Do you know where he wove through and he hung it up in the net? And we were like, you know, before the game, you're obviously saying, like, lads, who's following Canning? Who's doing this? Who's doing that? Lads, don't let this fella get a sniff of it. Then he weaves through your defence and hammers it into the goal. And you're just like, ah, bollocks.
I've never heard anything like that roar.
But this is it. Yeah. The place shook. And I remember going after that, something that other people don't realize as well is, let's say you do that in your league final over the weekend and you're down in, where was that on? Was it on in Ballinasloe? Down in Ballinasloe. You can communicate with it out as far as the midfield half hour and say, listen, lads, you know, push up to... You now have to react. Essentially, I'm going to say almost without communicating, you have to react. You can't shout. Nobody can communicate. So it's now down to each individual position. So if the ball lands near you, go and work and get your hands on that ball and get the ball over the bar at the other end. But you can't really communicate because the place is now deafening for about 3 or 4 minutes after that. And every missed rise, everything is reacted to. Like, everything is so intense. So that feeling that you get a little bit of doubt, and this is what we're getting into with these semi-finals. For players, if there's a little bit of doubt sown in another team, and we can apply this to Kilkenny and Tipperary as well, those doubts are amplified in Croke Park within these games. And it's the same for the football. So this is why I'm harping on the fact that, you know, Dublin reacted really well the last day when Limerick went ahead in the 51st minute. Adam English point to go down the far end, they knock in 2 goals. Unbelievable. If Dublin do that, Dublin hit the net against Cork, huge reaction, absolutely. But regardless if they hit the net, how do they react if Cork hit the net? That's going to be a big thing. And These psychological battles are up for grabs. So, you know, it won't be the losing of the game, but they can be turning points within games. And that's why I'm just saying that, like, 15, 20 minutes, let's see what happens if that scenario poses itself.
Yeah. There was a great article, and I'm trying to look for it now, Murph, with regard to the percentage of body language in professional sport as opposed to verbal communication. What percentage of communication is body language? It's something like 80% in professional sport.
Okay.
It leads perfectly into the point you've made. You can't talk to each other.
No.
A meter away. So you actually communicate through signalling or body language.
That's it.
Which is only so much. You know what I mean? So that's the So if Dublin concede a goal and the place erupts, if you have negative body language, that'll seep through your team. You start arguing with each other. So it's very important they maintain, as I said, emotional neutrality.
Yeah.
Now, Will, some good stuff there, boy.
Oh, there is, yeah. There you go. I just let you at it. Our panel is going for Cork across the board, by the way. But Dublin, don't worry. We're across the board. We went Limerick the last day. So maybe us writing you off is a good thing. K.O. Gorman, 757 on Spotify. So great pod last week. But was there a mention of the minor final? So minor final was on. And again, I would love to talk about this a little bit more, K.O. Gorman, than we could, but like an incredibly impressive win, pillar to post from Waterford, fourth All-Ireland title at minor level. I will of course point to the fact that Cormac Spain is of Offaly blood. 11 points in the final, 7 of them from frees. A slippy and slidey day, you need a good free taker, and he was popping them over. He's been very impressive throughout the championship. The perfect start for Waterford as well. Dylan Murphy laying the ball off early on, and Pierce Kwan putting the ball into the net. That was only a minute gone. And then, like, Waterford dominated the game. I kind of stayed away from talking to Podge last week, lads, because Podge Collins was involved with the Clare management team, and I was talking to him the week of the Cork win that they had, and I kind of just left it at that point. I said, look, Podge, you know, go off and enjoy the All-Ireland final. It was a frustrating one for Clare because they struggled to get in behind that Waterford defence. Waterford just had a few more scores. And again, if you've got an elite free taker, that's going to go a long way towards winning the game as well. Very, very talented bunch of Waterford hurlers coming through in that minor team. And what a lot of people have talked about is that Waterford have had this kind of miserable record, Murph, either side of kind of 2020 at underage level, minor and under 20s. This has to be a big boost for them. Like, when you think back, they got loads from the last Waterford team to win the All-Ireland minor. That would have been like Stephen Bennett, Ozzie Gleeson. Yeah, like a really, really good group of players. And only a few years later, they were playing the team that got to an All-Ireland final. So I don't know if they're going to get quite that amount of players from this group, but a big boost for Waterford hurling to get over the line here in the final.
Oh yeah, it's definitely welcome. Like they were really good at watching them against Kilkenny as well, and they're really impressive. And once they kind of got a run in Kilkenny, you know, they really kicked on. They got the scores they needed, and they just looked like they were full of confidence, full of belief. They also had the crowd behind them. Like, a great crowd travelled to Wexford Park that day with Waterford, despite all the bus problems they had. Yeah. They arrived in flying form. But it was just a really dominant performance, which I know Clare would be disappointed in, but it was just a very dominant performance from this Waterford team. And look, the win will be really welcome by Waterford people, because again, you don't need to win these things every year, but certainly every couple of years you want to know that we're pointed in the right direction here, and there is youth coming through. Because when you're Stephen Pennett or these lads maybe step away, you want to know that there is blood coming through, and particularly even for underage teams in Waterford as well, that maybe we're not too far away, maybe our structures aren't too bad, and we can compete at this level. So, yeah, look, I mean, it's a great win for them. I don't think many people around the country at all would begrudge Waterford of an All-Ireland Championship. So I think they'll be very happy with it now for the next few days.
Yeah, Clare fans had beaten that very fancy Cork team to get to the final, but as 112 to 5 points in Waterford's favour, you know, it's obviously difficult when you're coming back from an early goal that's conceded as well, but they got it back to 7, I think it was, early in the second half, and you wondered if Clare were going to reel them in, but Waterford again just had the scores up at the other end, and again, a resolute defensive performance from them as well, keeping Clare out. So it's going to be interesting to see where some of these young Waterford hurlers go. You've got Tipperary winning the under 20 this year, so two neighbours picking up the All-Ireland titles, and I wonder if it's going to be one stream sooner.
As you're talking, Lizzie, I went back to the Waterford team in 2013,
mm-hmm.
and the names that stand out would be...
Tyke de Burke on there as well.
I didn't see him now.
No, it might have been a bit early for him.
But I see Ozzie Gleeson, Shane Bennett, Mark O'Brien, Tom Devine, Stephen Bennett, DJ Forn, you know, Patrick Curran.
Yeah.
Like they've... Conor Gleeson, as you said, they got a lot of guys on that panel for 10 years, essentially, didn't they?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, there's a load of them. Like, 3-4 years later, there's a load of them that are senior. Like, they're obviously still young players, but they become mainstays in the senior panel really quickly.
Jeez, I'm looking at our team, and we got one. Conor Whelan was a mainstay. That's it, lad. Aina Burke. Not a mainstay. Shane Coon, not a mainstay. Sean, and up. No, we got one.
Do you know what? There's a thesis to be written and probably a full podcast in why Galway are not bringing players through from their underage teams over the last decade and a bit.
Yeah. Well, that's a different day's conversation. Well, please don't do it to me today.
No. Let's let that be an end of season pod. We can sit down and we can go.
What was that lady that wrote the article? Do you remember she said she passed comment on each county? She wrote it on Twitter. It was very interesting actually to read it.
Do you know what? I read the form and I hadn't actually got back to filling it in yet. So I will at some point. Yeah, she wanted our input on it as well.
Essentially, she said she's watched us on the podcast, Murph, and that I look like a defeated, frustrated guy, man. So, yeah.
Oh, God.
100% correct. So,
there was a Clare fan, by the way, Scale, in the week just gone by, who said, I don't think that Scale hates Clare. All he hates is Galway.
Oh, that's very strong.
I think it was more self-hate and self-pity.
No, I hate our position right now. That's what I hate.
Yeah.
That's what I hate. I hate our position. But you have to accept it and move on.
Yeah. So again, that might be therapy for another day. Another couple of quick hits before we finish off in the main pod for this week. And this is the moment where I lose my screenshots from Spotify. So forgive me for a second for just scrolling through here. We had... definitely a question which I think you can probably answer really quickly, and we can do in more detail another time. Davy Ryan, so who are your three favourites for Hurler of the Year now? Because, like, as I recall, we did this before the quarterfinals, and it's kind of a throwaway at the end of it. Because something came up about Fitzgibbon, and it was like, oh, is he in contention to be Hurler of the Year? And then we said, well, here's who I think is in contention. We were very Limerick heavy at the time, as I recall. Yeah. Limerick and Cork largely, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have Ryan Hayes in there.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I've Jarvis Skibbin in there.
Yeah,
because I'm making projections now, mind you.
You're going to the final, and
so you're not picking it off what you see at the moment. No,
I've changed. Remember I was saying about Tony Kelly last year. Obviously, I know Shane Donnan won it, but Tony Kelly, like, say, projected himself into the conversation between the two performances. You know.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why I actually didn't have. I don't think Jarvis Skibbin in my five, if you know what I mean. Up to that point, but now I have put them into it because it's likely, and even, you know, the way these awards can go at times, they can become very nearly romantic with the media. So if Cork win their Ireland, I'm putting Patrick Hogan into the conversation. I am
ahead of, like, Hayes, ahead of Fitzgibbon, ahead of Barrett. You think Cork, because he's finally got his Ireland, Celtic cross?
Cork win their Ireland, will
be God, yeah. Well, I'm. Will I go now or project? Oh, good. No, I'm going to go with what? A little bit of both, I suppose.
But if I go now, Murph, while you're thinking, if I went now, I would stick with my Brian Hayes. I still have Hugh Lawler, even though he might get it. But I still have him in the conversation. There's no way I'm taking him out at the moment. And if Jake Morris keeps at it, lad.
Well, this is it. Like, a lot is going to tell. That's why you find it hard to project, because... Jake Morris is absolutely... If Jake Morris gets to a final, like, that man has been absolutely immense all year.
He has been Tipperary's outstanding player, hasn't he?
Pick one from each team, Murphy, if you were to pick.
That's the best way to do it. It is. Jake Morris, Hugh Lawler, Dara Fitzgibbon.
Is it Sean Curry then for Dublin?
It probably has to be at the moment. Like, it does. Yeah, like, I'm there thinking of, like... Yeah, Sean Curry, it has to be from Dublin.
Again, hit us up in the comments if you're on the YouTube.
Like Sean Curry. Connor Burke was immense last year. Connor McHugh was immense as well. But in fairness, Sean Curry has been flying it. Like, in fairness, he took up the mantle there as well from Donal Burke. Like, so.
And so, Kilkenny, you're going Hugh Lawler rather than Mossy at the moment, are you?
I think so. Yeah, like, Hugh has just been his influence is huge. Like, Mossy, like, the thing is with the All-Ireland semi-final and the final. A player who is maybe not in our list there at the moment can win Hurler of the Year from that position without actually being on any list at the moment. Mossy is one of those players. They're just, let's say, just a small bit. I would say, like, Shane Barrett, like, he can go and win Hurler of the Year by having two fantastic games. Anyone else there, like, you know, Ormond, he's had a fantastic year. He could go and win Hurler of the Year if he had two fantastic games as well. So there's plenty of lads there who are just poised to launch. Well, two games, you can go and win it, you know?
Yeah, good contention there. Look, I think that's a good place to probably leave the pod. Again, we should leave it wide open. If you've got this far in, and by all means, throw us who you think should be Hurler of the Year at this point, and throw us in your predictions for this coming weekend. I hope everyone got sorted with tickets. There was a few fans who were, like, really concerned early last week when Cork and Dublin started to go quite quickly. I have my own suspicion, and this is just suspicion, that the Camogie Association will definitely have a certain amount of tickets. Like, surely they can't have a scenario where Clare and Waterford fans can't get a ticket on Saturday for the first game of the double header. And similarly, you would imagine if someone reserved for Kilkenny and Tip on Sunday as well, same two teams playing. So keep an eye out during the week. Oftentimes you find that there's a limited amount of tickets that are made available, etc., for this coming weekend as well. So hopefully anyone who wants a ticket could get sorted. James Skell, for now, thanking you, sir.
Thanks, folks.
Paul Murphy, good luck keeping the peace in the house and the in-laws over the next five days or so.
Thanks very much. I'll do my very best.
On Sunday, just let it all go.
Exactly. Yeah, forget about it. Forget about it.
All right. The lads will be back next week. We'll be reviewing both of the semi-finals. Hard to believe. Three pods left for the season. We'll talk to you again this weekend.